Welcome to Security Squad, a CertSecurity.com podcast for November 15th, 2010. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt. In this edition, we'll talk about FireSheet. A lot has been said about the Firefox plugin, but what does it mean for enterprises and their security policies? We'll talk a little bit about that. Then Microsoft is backing a plan to let ISPs quarantine computers infected with malware. Well, I'm sure there's some privacy concerns with that. Then it's bug bounty time again. This time, a security vendor is coming on board. Barracuda Networks is adding a bug bounty for its appliances. Google extended its program to YouTube and Blogger. But where's Microsoft? We'll chat about that. Well, joining me in the studio is Mike Momoso. Mike is editorial director of the Security and Media Group here at TechTarget. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Rob.
And Eric Perizzo is joining us. Eric is senior site editor and now a contributing columnist for CertSecurity.com with regular columns. Hey, Eric.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Getting some good feedback there on your columns, aren't you?
If by good you mean bad, then yes.
How about just lots of comments?
There you go.
They're out there. They're out there. You're getting them. It's good that you get you get some feedback.
It's always
good or bad.
It's always nice to know that the people are out there.
You're making an impression.
There you go.
Okay, well, let's start with FireSheet. It was introduced at the Torcon conference in San Diego. It's a Firefox plugin that makes it easy for almost anyone to hijack other people's social network connections. If you log into Twitter on a public Wi-Fi network, for example, and somebody happens to be running FireSheet, it'll sniff out the unencrypted traffic, and with a single click, you're pwned. I've used it here at TechTarget, and I've tested it at home. I've turned off my security at home and tested it, and I could say that it's quite easy to use. Very easy.
I'll back you up. It works.
So you've tested it as well. Mike, you think this is really highlighting something that we've known about for a long time?
Well, sure. I mean, it's highlighting the fact that companies aren't encrypting every web session. That they're encrypting just authentication. I think that's the problem, that you've got SSL at the start of a session, and then it doesn't carry through the rest of the way. And that's the biggest lesson, is that you should be encrypting entire sessions beyond authentication.
Yeah, and how about the weaknesses of public Wi-Fi? Or should you be wary if you're at a cafe and you're on public Wi-Fi, you're at an airport, and you want to log into your work email?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we've had a lot of technical articles on all of our sites about the dangers of these free public Wi-Fi. Every time they pop up on your wireless, to avoid them. It's a consumer problem. I mean, people that aren't as tech savvy as we are going to fall for these things, and that's the message that IT managers and security managers need to get out to their employees, that when they're remote, connect over the VPN. Don't trust hotspots and connections that don't come from a trusted source.
And it's not that easy. It's not something that end users or at an enterprise will be able to easily figure out, I think, because I read a blog entry by Eric Butler, the author of FireSheet, and he points out that many websites will encrypt the initial login, so it'll look like you're safe, because you'll see HTTPS just for the initial login. But then you go and say you're on Facebook and you start jumping around on different pages there, it's not going to be encrypted.
Right, and it's a matter of just a double click and you're in somebody's session. It's ridiculously easy.
It's basically called HTTP session hijacking or sidejacking, and it's been around for quite a while. This is just, I guess, the tool, Eric, is just making this easier for somebody who's less savvy to pull off.
Oh, sure. I mean, regarding the public Wi-Fi thing, if malicious attackers are really going to go after the data people send over public Wi-Fi networks, they're going to use much more sophisticated tools than this. This is simply a PR effort on Butler's part to raise awareness for HTTP session hijacking. And, people can deride him for trying to just simply get his name out there. But in reality, this is an important issue. And I think it'll be a good test to see if the organizations like Facebook, who provide websites where they only encrypt the authentication information and don't encrypt the cookie or the whole rest of the session, are they going to realize the dangers in that and make some changes? If they're really committed to security, they will. And if they aren't, well, we won't see any changes.
Well, we certainly have seen that they seem to be committed to privacy issues. They're constantly updating their systems to provide more privacy, more choices for users. But I guess from what I've read, the main problem is that it's very costly for websites, the companies behind these websites. They have to put in additional servers if they're going to and additional equipment if they're going to be having SSL sessions throughout a user's entire session.
Well, I think that's a misconception, though, because as Butler points out in his blog, there are ways to make that happen without having to make a serious security investment. Google is essentially the pioneer in this area.
Gmail.
And while it does essentially offer 100% HTTPS at this point, you know, it's put out documentation showing how other organizations can, you know, secure the entire start-to-finish session without needing all the resources that Google obviously has at his, as its disposal. So I hope more companies will take it seriously.
I wonder if that's true. I mean, just because Google says that it's doesn't take a large
investment. Well, I haven't read Google's documentation, but I think more companies should at least take a look and see if it's technically feasible.
Oh,
because I think there is.
But I would think that companies have already done this and they've determined that. Oh, if this has been a long-standing issue, that
I disagree.
Something blocking.
I disagree. I think companies are just assume that it would be too resource-intensive and costly and too much maintenance as opposed to revisiting the issue, which hopefully they will as a result of FireSheet.
There are a lot of security issues that are 20, 30. Look at buffer overflows. I mean, we still have them, and how long have they been around? And people, you would assume, are fairly aware of them, and yet they still creep into code and are still causing problems.
We should say that Microsoft has finally jumped on board with Hotmail. They initially were not providing the same service that Google did with Gmail, a complete SSL session, but now they are offering that. And I'm not sure if it's an opt-in or if it's
just automatically enabled. Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, those are, it's two pretty good examples to follow, and it's good to see that, you know, big companies like Google and Microsoft are at least starting to move in that direction, and, you know, others may follow. Just in terms of awareness, it'll raise the issue that, okay, wait, you know, there's something going on here that we need to pay attention to if they're moving forward.
Why are we putting the impetus on the website owners? Why aren't we putting it on the public Wi-Fi owners or the cafe owners that are offering just these wide open Wi-Fi sessions? Why shouldn't they have encrypted Wi-Fi? You have to log into your Wi-Fi.
Do we really have to go down this road? I mean,
why? What's the problem with that?
The way the internet works today, the pipe is never going to be truly secure.
Correct.
So why are we expending effort on trying to secure the pipe, which instead of taking the FireSheet approach and securing the web application? Doesn't that make a lot more sense?
Well, it may, but it still provides another layer of security if you have to use a password and log in. FireSheet won't even work. There are other sophisticated tools that will.
But the idea here is to focus on the low-hanging fruit. It's much easier to secure a web application by encrypting the entire session.
Again, you're assuming that it's much easier.
But if
you're the technology officer at Facebook, I'm sure you're looking at dollars and cents.
If it was easy to secure Wi-Fi networks, wouldn't they be secure by now? How long have they been around?
What's your point? I don't understand what you're...
My point is that it makes a lot more sense to... If you're interested in making sure that people can use the internet or the web securely, you're better off to secure the specific applications like Facebook as opposed to trying to secure, you know, every Wi-Fi network in the world.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Starbucks and you're offering a free hotspot and it's going to cost you X amount to secure it, there's your incentive. Your incentive might go away to offer that extra service.
Oh, come on. All you would have to do is click a button, for God's sakes, to get web-enabled.
Well, you got to buy the equipment that has the button first.
Yeah.
But we've written for years about how web is essentially WPA.
Worthless. WPA, rather.
WPA2. Get with the times, Rob.
web. That's so 2003.
Oh, boy. Well, how about enterprises now? If you're a CISO at an enterprise, Mike, are you going to tell your employees not to log into email if they're on a public Wi-Fi?
Yeah, it's going to be part of my policy. Now, whether I can enforce that or get them to follow the policy, that's a different issue altogether. I mean, you know, once somebody's outside the firewall, it's often a matter of convenience. They want to get to, you know, whatever resources they need to do their job. You know, it would be incumbent upon the enterprise to offer a VPN, to offer some kind of, you know, either a client on their computer or a web-based VPN and log in and make sure they log in that way.
And then the other method, I guess, of avoiding fire sheep is through using cellular data networks. You can just, if you're on 3G or 4G, and 4G is becoming more and more widely available, much faster, that particular traffic is much more difficult to sniff because it's completely encrypted.
To me, I think it's interesting to see what happens 3, 4, 5 years from now when we have you know, wide area networks from you know, the technology from Clearwire and those guys that provide basically, you know, nationwide Wi-Fi access.
Google might be getting into that game too.
Exactly. What's going to happen at that point? Is this problem going to be better by then because the application providers have taken this advice and secured their web applications so that these problems don't exist? Or is it going to be worse because it only makes it easier for people to get on more insecure networks?
All right, let's move on. The next topic is Microsoft's trustworthy computing chief, Scott Charney, has been publicly supporting a sort of healthcare plan for computers. He says that we've come to the point where ISPs should be able to scan your machine for malware prior to getting on the internet, and machines that are infected would be quarantined until the malware is disinfected, the computer's disinfected. This raises a red flag for privacy advocates, but Eric, I know you wrote a column on this, and you like the plan.
Well, I don't necessarily like the plan, but what I'm saying is, since there really is no plan yet, what I think enterprise security pros should do is at least give it a chance and consider whether or not it's something worth advocating for. As I wrote in my column a couple weeks back, why I think it's a good idea, first off, it would only be affecting consumer machines. You know, enterprises that have their own, you know, enterprise, you know, internet access plans, what have you, you know, would be charged with putting their own protections in place as they do today. This would be about consumer PCs, which, you know, are by and large the vast majority of the machines that are running botnets and spreading malware today. So if you can control that, then I think you're controlling a large chunk of the malware that's being spread around the internet today.
The problem is you're controlling it, right? It's about controlling.
Controlling malware, sure. Isn't that the whole? Isn't that why we're here? Isn't that why enterprise security pros do what they do? I mean, that's a major problem today. And there are a bunch of other minor concerns that get privacy advocates riled up, such as what happens if my grandma can't get internet access and doesn't know how to fix it. Well, you know, clearly there would have to be some pretty detailed, easy to use remediation plans in place, and it wouldn't be cheap. But I think it's by and large worth considering, since God knows what we do now isn't working. So why not try a more sophisticated approach to try to keep malware from proliferating around the internet?
The slippery slope there is that, you know, Rob made a subtle point there. I mean, maybe not so subtle, that it's about control. And, you know, who's going to make the call to take these computers offline? Who's going to be the arbiter of, you know, what a secure configuration looks like on a PC? You know, the ISPs aren't going to do it. You don't want the government doing it. You don't want Microsoft doing it, for sure. And,
you know, well, I think you'd need a consortium that, you know, no one, you know, body has control over. But you need a whole bunch of parties involved, all the ones you mentioned, plus security vendors and you know, a whole host of other third parties who have no stake in it. to come in and decide how the program would be run. I mean, Microsoft has said it doesn't want to run the program. It's just saying there needs to be one.
ISPs can do it.
Sure, they won't.
Because of liability issues?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think that's necessarily true. We're already seeing Comcast wade into these waters with its, you know, malware notification service that it's launching. You know, it's just the first step along this sort of path.
Why not just have a malware notification service? Why actually quarantine and block people from getting on
Comcast
the internet?
Isn't taking you offline, I don't believe.
All right, as most of our listeners will attest to, when you go to someone's house and they have a computer problem and you go to check it out, one of the first things, at least in my experience, 9 out of 10 times, you'll see the little icon in the tray saying, you know, install your Microsoft updates. And they'll say, oh, what's that little thing? I'd always leave it alone because I don't know what to do. That's the whole problem with notifications, is that they're too easy to ignore. You need a more active set of behaviors to take place so that consumers aren't left in the lurch. They aren't wondering, what should I do? What should I not do? Because the way malware works today, especially with rogue anti-malware, there are so many choices that are presented to the average user that they just don't know how to deal with. So they either just click OK or click X to get rid of it so they can ignore it. And that just breeds more insecurity. So that's the kind of behavior that needs to be curbed with these more aggressive programs.
I don't know. I think the guys that write this rogue anti-malware stuff are just wringing their hands hoping this happens, because they can just imagine the uptick in that stuff if this goes through.
How so? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, you know, you don't want to be taken offline. Install my antivirus software. It'll clean up your computer in no time and, you know, avoid being taken offline. And then you're just infected again. And
well, the idea, though, is that there's going to be a common, you know, signature base that will say these, you know, rogue anti-malware programs are bad. And if you have them, you know, you'll go into this quarantine area to remediate, so that, you know, those will actually be less of an issue. What I think would be more of an issue is 0 days, because obviously you can't have proactive signatures for 0 days. So suddenly, I think from the attacker's perspective, that game would get a lot more activity and potentially cause a lot more problems. So, I mean, definitely there are pluses and minuses with any kind of, you know, internet access remediation plan that would be broad-based. But, you know, All my call was trying to say is that the idea shouldn't be dismissed offhand. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if governments and ISPs are already moving in that direction.
Maybe the problem is that the message is coming from Microsoft.
Oh, sure.
You know, if it was somebody else.
Wouldn't it be worse if the message was coming from the government?
Yes, but in this point,
I don't know what's worse.
Right, but in this case, it is coming from Microsoft, and they're still... Their products still aren't clean. I mean, look at the last, October's record patch Tuesday. You know, their products are still all about features first and fix them later. I mean, no matter the strides they made, and the SDL is awesome, and patch Tuesday has brought consistency to companies and so forth, but it's still Microsoft pushing this, and that turns people off. I mean, there's a lot of still hard feelings about this, and, you know, on its surface, the idea is okay. I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's constructive.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's kind of why Microsoft is looking to put these sorts of position papers out there, to try to get a few more allies on board, so that it's not, you know, championing this sort of effort alone, and thereby, you know, bringing all the skeptics along with them. So. Again, I say I hope the plan will get some consideration, or any kind of plan along these lines, because the malware authors are winning the battle right now when it comes to consumer PC or consumer security in general, and some sort of more drastic action needs to happen to turn the tide.
I don't think it's going to happen, because if the only way for it to happen, and this was a topic at RSA last year, or this year rather, the government involvement. The government is going to need to give some sort of assurance to ISPs that they aren't going to be sued. Once you get the government involved, that's when even more so than private companies like Microsoft or Google. Once you get the government involved, that's when people start saying, oh, boy.
See, I disagree.
More worried about privacy.
I would lean toward the side of, I think this sort of system is inevitable. So I think the more people who weigh in on it now and dictate the direction it takes, the better off we'll be, as opposed to ISPs simply deciding what they're going to do.
It's going to take a catastrophic event on the level of September 11th in order for something like this to be, for people to bend over and say, okay, we'll accept this.
And don't you think the way things are headed now?
I don't think it's catastrophic. Everybody's
hunky-dory
right now.
Isn't such an event inevitable?
That's what we've been debating.
That's a good question.
For years, right?
Yeah.
Half the stuff we hear is FUD, and the other half is, yeah, okay, there's a threat there.
I think if we had an ISP in here, I think you would hear a very different story. I think they
would. I spoke to an ISP, and I had an interview with Adam Rice, and he's the chief security officer at Tata Communications. This is a tier one global ISP provider. A ton of traffic going through there. They service a ton of enterprises. He says the technology exists for any tier one ISP to listen and sample their traffic. They can trace malicious traffic from where it starts all the way to its origin. The technology is not expensive, and he says that it wouldn't violate too many privacy laws, he thinks. And he backs that up by saying it just looks at the IP header and doesn't include analysis of the payload.
The message.
And they're using this. They're offering this service to enterprises to stop denial of service attacks right now on their network.
Now, does this fall under the classification of packet inspection?
Yeah, that's how I posed my question to him.
I was going to say, this isn't necessarily network access control. It's more of a packet inspection based system.
The problem is that you'd be putting, let's say that the government did grant immunity to ISPs saying that they can go ahead and use deep packet inspection as long as they are only collecting IP header information and are not doing deep analysis of any content on their customers' machines. How do you monitor that? How do you... You know, who's behind monitoring whether or not the deep packet inspection...
Is government immunity really going to be necessary? I mean, I don't think we need to be that dramatic. I think one day the tier one backbone providers and the internet service providers or somebody have to change their terms of service agreement and say, this is what we're going to do starting on X date. If you like it, fine, don't do anything.
That's not going to pass muster.
If you don't like it, opt out and you're all done. That's how it's going to be.
Something like that's going to have to be settled in the court of law, depending on what country you're in.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that.
What are the advocates? What is it called?
Net neutrality.
Exactly.
It's basically, you can't deny the pipe to anybody based on what the content is.
Thank you, Mike.
But again, we're not talking about necessarily closing the pipe. We're simply talking about
inspecting. That's what you're talking about. Isn't quarantining closing the pipe?
No. It's simply...
temporarily? Closing the pipe.
Turning down the spigot. So that people can so that remediation can take place. It's the same thing as if you have a communicable disease and you're quarantined to your house.
Drinking the Microsoft Kool-Aid now. Go ahead.
Do you have the right to leave your house, whether or not anyone says you shouldn't? And this is the same kind of thing. Should individuals have the right to put insecure computers online and infect others? That's what this discussion ultimately goes down.
There's a subtle difference with that analogy that Microsoft is using and applying it to internet usage.
What's the difference? We're now seeing malware that can crash airplanes. That kills people.
A person that is being quarantined for public health reasons is automatically giving out a possible viral infection to other people who... And those other people, and this disease will be spread to, have no way to protect themselves. And that is why that person is quarantined in a public health situation. Because other people in the public can't protect themselves. Right? The whole thinking with that, the public health risk is that, Eric, if you came down with a disease and you're in the same room as me, and it's airborne, I'm screwed, and I have no way to protect myself. Now, if you apply that to internet usage, there are plenty of ways that consumers can protect themselves to avoid malware infections.
Well, there are plenty of ways that people can protect themselves from disease, but they don't.
No, and that's why not everybody is quarantined. The only time that public health officials quarantine people is when it is a airborne disease. It is something that you can't protect. Other people that aren't infected can't protect themselves from.
This is why vaccinations are mandatory in some cases, especially when you're traveling, you know? It's the same thing here. What happens when
someone... When was the last time you heard about people being quarantined? Go ahead. Give me an example of a recent quarantine.
SARS ring a bell?
Right.
There you go.
And why was that? Why did that happen?
Because people could not protect themselves.
Exactly. You just proved my point.
Which is the
same
thing. Now
apply that to the internet.
Which is the same thing.
People can protect themselves. The security tools are available.
They have to be taught to do that, and right now the mechanisms are not in place to make that easy enough for people to do on their own. The same thing happened with healthcare in the decades past. People had to be taught what good behavior was. We're not at that point yet with internet security. There's going to come a time when there's going to be malware that spreads that supports a botnet that attacks something like air traffic control systems or SCADA systems, and it's going to reach a critical mass. And at that point,
those are private networks
attack.
Or those are government networks, rather. That is a completely different subject than an ISP, than a public ISP that you can buy access to.
What I'm saying is that the mechanisms are not intuitive today to prevent that sort of malware from infecting consumer PCs. Consumers don't know how to deal with that. And there needs to be a more aggressive mechanism in place to prevent the critical systems, never mind individuals' personal information, from being compromised.
Mike, don't you... I'm not going to ask you to agree with me, but...
I do.
I might not be clearly communicating the subtle differences between Microsoft's health analogy and applying
the public health comparisons. They don't work. I mean, the bottom line is you're not going to deny people internet access based on security because of the economic trickle down. I mean, it's not just a matter of keeping people off of Facebook. It impacts e-commerce, and there are too many business and monetary pressures for that to be allowed right now. Again, you can't force a security. You can't force people to have vaccinations. You can't force people to take their medicine. You can't force security on people. Is it right? Does it make it right? No, but that's the situation we have now.
The mistake you're making is comparing contemporary internet security to contemporary healthcare. I think what you need to do is compare the internet security state today with the state of healthcare 100 years ago, because that's old comparatively, that's where the life cycle of each one matches up to best. As it stands today, we kind of have healthcare figured out. We know
that's another debate.
Well, we have medicine figured out much better than we did back in the day, so we know how to avoid disease, we know how to live healthy lives, we know how to treat the sick. We can't say all those things about computer security today, and that's why we need more aggressive mechanisms to help people do that.
Well, Google and Mozilla offer a bug bounty, and now Barracuda Networks is jumping in to reward hackers who find serious vulnerabilities in some of its products. Some of the bug types that are in scope include remote exploits, privilege escalation, cross-site scripting, code execution, command injection. We've talked about some of these Google, some of these bounty programs in the past. It started with Google, and did it start with Google? No, it started with Mozilla, right? Mozilla was first.
Mozilla has done it almost since the beginning, I believe.
With Firefox, and then Google jumped on board this year with Chrome.
Right.
And extended it to YouTube and Orkut, and I can't think of the
Blogger,
other.
Blogger.
There are other sites. So it seems to, Google says that it seems to work. But the question is, why should we be rewarding people for hacking software on their own?
Is this a disclosure debate?
No.
No.
I'm not going to talk about disclosure.
I don't really think that's the point, though. I think
it is. It is the point, right? Because, well, Mozilla, for example, maybe they don't have a large engineering team, so they needed to go out and get other people to hack their... It's more open source. You could say that that is more open source.
I think this is an effort to meet the researchers kind of halfway. You know, a lot of these guys just, you know, have been crying for a long time that they want some money for their work.
But nobody's asking them to do the work.
That's a great point, and one I've made before, too.
Yeah,
this
is a repeat conversation.
Yeah.
See, the way I see it is I don't think the bounty is going to be enough to convince legitimate or illegitimate researchers to solely for that reason disclose their research to Google or
it's worked.
Barracuda.
Google has already paid out thousands of dollars to.
But I think the bigger picture here is simply drawing attention to their vulnerability remediation process and letting people know that, hey, we are actively looking for vulnerabilities ourselves. Here's our process for remediating them. You know, anyone who wants to support that, you know, we're welcome to that. And I think that's the bottom line message. And I think the bounty thing is just, you know, largely to get people's attention and to get media coverage.
Are we seeing software vendors fearful of 0 days, and they think that, you know, by offering this, they would have fewer 0 days as a result?
Yeah, I don't know if they'll have fewer 0 days. I mean, I think their optimistic hope is that there would be fewer 0 days in the wild because the program would encourage more, you know, disclosure instead of, you know, releasing them in the wild. But, you know, when we're talking about, gray hats or black hats, a bounty isn't going to be enough to convince them to, set aside the whatever limited fame they would get by unleashing a 0 day or publicly disclosing one. So I don't really see that part of it changing that much.
Yeah, they can make more selling it elsewhere rather than reporting it to the vendor for some kind of nominal bounty. I mean, you're right. This is basically a PR move and getting some attention on their vulnerability programs. If they can attract some researchers and appease some guys to work with them a little closer and throw them some kind of stipend, I think that, you know, it's a win on both sides.
Yeah. But Microsoft hasn't stepped in.
They don't want
Microsoft them. Says it's not in the best interest of their customers. They're leaving it up to their engineers.
Well, Microsoft has enough people out there looking for flaws in its products, though. It doesn't really need any help in that regard. Plus, I think its disclosure process is, you know, widely known, and its trustworthy computing program.
If it's so widely known, then why are we having so many publicly disclosed vulnerabilities? Remain open. I mean, we're seeing that I think more often, and it's, you know,
well, for
a lot
if you
more
if you're a gray
disclosed,
hat, what better way is there to make a name for yourself than to throw out a few Microsoft 0 days?
Right, and that's my point, I guess, that you know, we would have fewer of those events happening if Microsoft offered some sort of bounty.
Yeah, but it would have to be like $10,000, at least, don't you think?
These so maybe people, that's the issue. Well, no, that can't be the issue, because Google, I would think, Chrome has a smaller base. It's not. I'm sure
much
a vulnerability
smaller.
In Chrome is not really worth as much as a vulnerability in Internet Explorer. That's for sure.
No, I mean,
so,
ultimately,
yeah, you're right. They would have to offer much more money,
and I'm sure that's what Microsoft has considered internally. It's like, what are the pros and cons? Well, how much would we have to offer per bounty to actually make this worthwhile to the people who we're trying to prevent from disclosing 0 days and such? And
Microsoft's worth a lot of money. I'm sure they can afford to pay out double what Google's paying out. Look at Google. I mean, Google can afford to up their bounty.
Have you seen Microsoft's stock price recently? They're not swimming in it.
That's
like
right.
Google gave everybody a 10% raise and what, $1,000 bonus today or yesterday?
That's right. And Microsoft's CEO Steve Ballmer cashed in a ton of money, didn't he? Over several billion dollars, right?
Well,
worth of stock, and
he sees where the trend's going, and it's not in his direction.
How did we get on this? We're talking about bug bounty programs. There really isn't much to say about it, is there? Except that it's happening. And I think the Barracuda, I think that's more of a PR stunt than anything.
Sure.
And just the first security vendor to come out and say, yeah, why don't you give it a shot and see if you can find any serious vulnerabilities in our application firewall and other appliances and
Right, to take us full circle.
We have full faith. I'm sure that that's the message behind that is we have full faith in our security products.
Circling back to where we started, it's no different than Fire Shepherd or, you know, the other little follow-on tools to Fire Sheep. You know, they're not necessarily about solving the problem. They're just simply trying to hop onto the PR bandwagon there. Since ultimately, again, Fire Sheep was about, you know, public awareness as opposed to, you know, an exploit method.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Squad. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For Mike Momoso and Eric Perizzo, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.